far away look in your eyes. When there's no one.
From sea to shining sea, throughout the solar system, and extending to interstellar regions beyond, this is the Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this glorious planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. You could be doing a million other things, but you chose to be here, and I appreciate that. I truly do. And, you know, I'm here because you matter, and I'm here because you have a right to know. You, well, you're here because you want to be. And I appreciate it. If you are brand new to the Kevin Smith Show, we publish a newsletter that you need to know about. It's absolutely free, and it's called the K-Files, all right? The K-Files. And in order to subscribe, you just go over to my website, click where it says K-Files, and subscribe. And then you'll get an email with a link in it. And you have to click that link in order to activate your subscription. That way, we're absolutely sure you yourself really did subscribe and you really wanted to subscribe. And that way, we don't spam anybody. But, you know, if you're not getting the K-Files, we publish it twice a month. If you're not getting it, nobody can fix that but you. So be sure you get over there and subscribe, all right? Tonight, we're going to be talking about a new mystery. It's very old stuff, but it's a new mystery, something newly discovered. And then we're going, after I talk about that and bring that information to you, it's very, very interesting stuff. Very compelling, and made me raise more than one eyebrow. It made me raise two. After that, then we will open up the phone lines and go BYOT, bring your own topic. And again, for those of you who are new, it means bring your own topic. We'll talk about whatever you wish to talk about, as long as it's in the world of the strange and the unexplained. All right? Now, we also have another great big mystery tonight. Tonight is the final broadcast of our 13th year of broadcasting. Yep, you heard me right, and I will tell you why on the other side of the upcoming break. It is the final broadcast of our 13th year of broadcasting. We've been at it for 13 years now. And we'll talk about that, all right? And I'm sure some of you are at this point running, screaming into the nighttime. But maybe you should hold that. We'll see. Also, remember that, you know, this show exists not only because of you. I mean, it's all about you. And so when we open up the phone lines here in a little bit, be sure you write the telephone number down and jump in and join the conversation. We love to hear from you. And if you've never called before, well, a BYOT night, which this is an excellent time to call because we have more telephone time available. It's easier to get in. All right, we're going to check out of here for about 3 minutes, and we'll be back. All of the music used here at the Kevin Smith Show is from independent artists. Most of it from independent artists at MusicAlley.com. Go over to MusicAlley.com. Check out thousands of artists and thousands of great independent tunes. MusicAlley.com. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Apparently, the automation software has decided to do weird stuff again tonight, but that's okay. That's all right. It has a mind of its own. It does what it wants to do, apparently, when it wants to do it. All right. I told you before we went to break that tonight is the final broadcast of our 13th year of broadcasting. And because I've been doing this for 13 years, I do know that there's a portion of the audience that has gone running and screaming into the nighttime, already on Twitter and Facebook saying, this is the last show, everybody better tune in, Kevin's going off the air. because I've learned lots of people don't listen. They just hear what they want to hear. It is the final show of our 13th year, because tomorrow is the 13th anniversary. And when we come back on Monday, yes, we'll be back on Monday. We'll be into our 14th year of broadcasting. And I'll tell you, it has been an amazing ride. It has for 13 years. And it's been tough. It's been really tough. But it's been an amazing ride. And I'm hoping to see at least another 13 more. And possibly more than that. But it's just been absolutely way, way, way more than I ever thought, ever dreamed. You know, I have a little bit of a, had a little bit of a time deciding what was the anniversary date. You know, I talked about this several years ago. Because the show actually began by accident during a blizzard back in January, late January, early February of 2000. And you know the story, and you know it was a horrible, horrible blizzard. And I was in Pristina, Kosovo, no electricity, extremely cold, and with no electricity, that means in the city, no running water, and no elevators to get up to your apartment. And I mean, we could just go. I could go on and on and on and tell you what the conditions were like. It was tough. And this show actually started because of that blizzard, and because I was extremely bored when I would get home at night after spending all day working at the International Police Headquarters there in Pristina, Kosovo. And after I had read everything there was to read by candlelight, there was no radio, there was no television, and so I read everything there was that I could get my hands on to read. Spent a couple of nights playing some games on the computer. You know, I had a laptop. We had generators at work, and so I could charge it up at work and then play for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then that was dead. A couple of nights of that, and I'm not a gamer, you know, and so I was bored, and I decided to use the computer for something else, and that was charge it up at work and then just talk to it as if it was a friend that had come over for a cup of coffee, and talk to it about the kinds of things I was interested in that I didn't hear people talking about. And that was UFOs, ghosts, aliens, just the sort of things that I had an interest in simply because nobody else seemed to be talking about it. Over here in the United States, of course, you had Art Bell talking about it. But in Kosovo, we didn't have Art Bell on the radio. And even if he had been on the radio in Kosovo, there was no radio. No electricity. So that's how the show started. It was just some monologues that, I guess you could call it that, just me talking about it and then asking questions and saying, you know, things like, why is this such a sensitive subject? Why are they hiding information on this? And, you know, and then I would answer, you know, well, the only reasons I can see are these, and these. And so that's how it started. But that was January or February of 2000. It was about May the 11th, the best I could figure it out several years ago when we I finally nailed it down, or tried to. It was about May the 11th when I went online with the first Kevin Smith Show. And, you know... It was bad. It was really, really bad. Technologically, I mean, the software that we use now and take for granted just didn't even exist back then. And plus I didn't even have a microphone for this laptop. And what I was using for a microphone was a little pocket cassette recorder that had a built-in mic, and I ran a plug from the earphone jack on that over to the computer, and I spoke into that microphone. That's how the first shows began. Some of you have actually been listening since then. Some of you remember those shows from Kosovo. And I know that because I get email from people once in a while telling me that they've been listening, you know, since I began over in Kosovo. And it was tough. It was really, really tough. At that time, I had absolutely no idea that I would be sitting in my own studio. I had no idea that we would have even the capability of streaming live video as we do on our private channel. None of what we take for granted here today, none of this even entered my mind as a possibility back then. And so it's been as much a surprise for me as perhaps it has been for you. And those who have been with me since Kosovo, wouldn't you agree it's been a wild ride? It has indeed been a strange, wild, and woolly ride. Weird things. Almost died on the air one night. I never expected that. And that's really true for those who, some of you remember that night. And by the way, you know, some of the new listeners, you know, you hear me talk about how this is like a family, and you're kind of getting in when the crowd is big and you can't figure out how can this really be like a family. It's just something he says. No, it really is like a family. That night, I had people that called our associate host and told him, hey, you know, Jerry, something is wrong with Kevin. You need to see if you can get in touch with him. And that something was wrong. During the breaks, I was just passing out, and it was tough. I didn't know it at the time. It was, I knew that was happening, but I didn't know that was diabetic stuff. And I had never had any problems or symptoms of it. And bam, there it was. And it was rough. But like family, we had people that called and tried to help me out. And I really, really appreciate that. And back then we had a producer for the show. And so I would just somehow make it to the break and then just collapse. And I'd wake up and he's had ice in a washcloth and had ice on my head and saying, you know, you need me to call 911. I'd say, no, let's get to the next break. We'd come out of the break and I continued. I don't know how I did it. And probably not very well, but we'd get on to the next break and then I would just collapse again. And but we got through that show and it was family. And so it's been a wild and woolly ride. It's it really has been. And I wouldn't trade it for anything, you know. I mean, can you imagine getting to this point in your life and being able to do exactly what you want to do? That's what I get to do. I get to do the Kevin Smith Show. And what a great thrill and an honor it is to get to do it. And I appreciate you for making that happen. But you'd... As I said earlier, you are what it's about, and you do make it happen. And so when we open the phone lines here in a little bit, be sure you pick up that phone and make it happen again tonight, okay? All right, let's get to this story about this new mystery at the Pyramid of the Feathered Serpent. Sometimes it's called Quetzalcoatl's Pyramid. Sometimes it is called the Temple of the Feathered Serpent. But it is in I never can pronounce this. Teotihuacan in Mexico. And the mystery, I mean, it's, of course, a long time ago, this whole temple or pyramid and the complex were discovered, and they began to excavate it. And it's been about 100 years, actually, since excavations began there. And that whole thing is a mystery still. I mean, there are the buildings. Nobody knows who built them. Not really. And not only does not nobody knows who built them, the original builders, furthermore, nobody really knows anything about the urban life that was around all of this. I mean, you can go to the other ancient pyramid sites and you find clues that tell you a lot about the culture. And that's not the case here. It's not like it's devoid of that. It just doesn't have much to tell archaeologists about the culture. And so they know that it was, you know, a very well-populated, large urban area. But they don't know a whole lot. They know some, but not a whole lot about this urban culture. This was one, if not the largest urban center of the ancient world in its day. Imagine that. So what is the largest city in the world today? What is the biggest city in the world today? I'm not even sure anymore. I know the most populated city in the United States today is New York City. I don't know that that's the largest in the world, and I think maybe it isn't. I think maybe there is another city that may be larger than New York City, but maybe it is New York. Imagine, as an archaeologist, coming along a couple of thousand years later and digging up New York City. Imagine that. But imagine that for some reason the libraries are empty. Imagine that there are no written records anywhere. Imagine that it's just devoid of that. You find a few cooking utensils. You find, you know, a few tools, maybe a weapon or two, and that's about it. What could you really tell about the people who lived in this magnificent city? Well, you wouldn't be able to tell much at all. You wouldn't be. There's just not much that you would be able to say about them. Except they're pretty good builders. You could say that. And you could say, well, a city this size housed probably this many people. But let's say you didn't find any musical instruments. You didn't find any writings. It'd be difficult, wouldn't it? So this is one of the reasons that the archaeologists have stayed busy at Teotihuacan for 100 years, because it's a mystery, and it's that continued pursuit to find something, anything, that will tell them the story. In that pursuit, they discovered that there is a tunnel system under that pyramid. And let me, for those who are watching, let me just put a larger picture of that pyramid up. When we look at this pyramid, in this picture we see some steps going up to a platform. And then it looks as if there are steps on the far side of that platform that are going up the pyramid. That's not the case. There is a space between that platform, that large stone platform. There's a space between there and the pyramid. So if you go up the steps on this side of the platform, walk across the top of the platform, you go down the other side of the platform, walk across an open grassy area like we see in the foreground here, and then you go up the steps of the pyramid. In that space is where the archaeologists discovered a tunnel system. And they were doing some archaeology, and so, you know, they sank a small shaft. They found, I think this is correct, they found a few bones. So they deepened it, and again, and then finally they broke through to this tunnel system. Now, when they broke through to the tunnel system, this is part of the mystery. You see, the tunnel system was there, but was mostly full of sand and dirt. Now, you might say, well, you would expect that after, you know, a couple of thousand years. No, you wouldn't. Whenever they go into, for instance, in the Valley of the Kings, and they go into a new tomb, they may have to dig through sand to get to the entrance of that tomb, but when they do, generally speaking, it's not full of sand. Yeah, it's dirty and dusty and stuff, but it's not full of sand. Why? Because it's been closed. This tunnel system has been closed up for hundreds of years. Hundreds of years. Nobody knows how long. It's been covered up. And so you would have dirt and dust in there, but you wouldn't expect to find it mostly full of sand. But it was. More after this break.
Missing.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're talking about this great mystery discovered at and under the Pyramid of the Feathered Serpent, or Quetzalcoatl's Pyramid in Teotihuacan. I was talking about the tunnel system being full of sand. It was not full to the top. You could crawl, you know, on your belly in there. So what the archaeologists had to do was they had to excavate the sand out of there. And they have found some pottery in there. And they could tell, they could see that there were some chambers. There were some side tunnels and then some chambers and things like that. As a matter of fact, you know, they could see where those side openings were. But they couldn't get up in there quickly. But they did a map with using, I guess, sonar, a sounding device. And those who are looking at the show tonight, those who are watching, are seeing a map of that. I don't know what all these little red dots are, but these this overall outline is the outline of the tunnel and chambers. So far, discovered so far. And it has basically, I don't know, you could say the shape of a bird or the shape of an airplane or a boat with big wings on the side, on both sides. It's left to right. It's long. And not narrow, but not wide. And then at about the point where you would expect for an airplane, if the front of the craft was to our right, about the point where you expect wings to be, there are side chambers. Now, there may be more side chambers than this. These are the ones so far discovered. Well, the archaeologists had a little bit of a problem in that, you know, there was a lot more to discover than they could get to quickly because archaeology is not fast. They have to painstakingly, carefully remove that sand. Otherwise, I mean, you just drive your shovel into the dirt, you may be breaking something that's priceless down there and not know it. You don't know it's down there, and you just drive your shovel into the dirt and crack, and you break something that's priceless. And so it's very, very slow. I mean, they move mountains of dirt by the spoonful. And so very slow. What they did, though, and they, you can go on the internet, you'll find pictures where they've excavated it enough that you actually can see pictures of the archaeologists down in the tunnels, and you know, it's pretty good sized tunnels. And as a matter of fact, the archaeologists are standing up in these tunnels, so it's, you know, it's pretty good size once it's, the dirt is removed, once the sand is removed. But what they did is they got a little robot with cameras on it and sent it into the areas where they had not yet excavated and where they couldn't yet go in and stand up. Okay. Well, on May the 3rd, articles started appearing all over the internet, all kinds of places, including the Huffington Post. That's not where I got my information because it was very, very limited there. But they sent the robot into an area previously not excavated and previously not explored. And it found another chamber. And in that chamber, it found hundreds of little yellow spheres just scattered everywhere. And And they now have been able to get in there, and they've, you know, marked and retrieved some of these spheres. In the raw, they don't look like spheres. By in the raw, I mean just laying on the ground. Most of them, just they're yellow, but they just like look like, you know, clumps of some kind of stone. But when they clean them off and examine them, they turn out actually to be clay orbs, clay spheres. And they say the reason they are yellow is because of the chemical that's left on them, the chemical composition that's left on them from what they were covered with. Okay? And I did read what they are covered with, but I can't remember now. They're covered with, I think it's called jarosite. And but anyway, this is something left behind by being at one time coated with, or the outside covering of this, these spheres, was what we call fool's gold. So here's a mystery. You've seen fool's gold, right? You know what that is. How do you cover something in fool's gold? We'll talk about why in just a minute, but how? How would you, how do you cover something in fool's gold? Fool's gold is, you know, it's chunks of rock, iron pyrite, not rock, but iron pyrite. But now, imagine these spheres are between 1.5 to 5 inches in diameter. So, you know what a cherry tomato is, from that size up to the size of, say, a baseball, or maybe a little larger than a baseball. They're clay orbs, balls, spheres. Why would you make hundreds of them? How would you cover them in fool's gold? Why would you do it? And then scatter hundreds of them across the floor of this chamber under the temple of the sun. I'm sorry, temple of the feathered serpent, not temple of the sun. Temple of the feathered serpent. Serpent. Why would you do that? How could they do it? Now, I'm pretty sure there are going to be some scientists who are listening who will say, well, yeah, we could do that. That's no big deal. Not to you. You think it would be a big deal maybe 2,000 years ago? 100 B.C.? A little more than 2,000 years ago. 100 B.C. I think it would be something we'd have to consider a monumental task for them to be able to do that 2,000 years ago. Therefore, I think we would have to consider that their knowledge and skill was rather monumental, because it was done. It always kind of amazes me, you know, I like I said earlier, I've been doing this for 13 years. I get email from all kinds of people, and I get email sometimes from scientists, various levels of scientists, telling me that what I'm talking about is, you know, I know you're well-intentioned, but, you know, it's really not all that big a deal. You simply would do this, then you do that, and everything they're talking about requires a high level of information. And the point, I'm not saying that they couldn't, see, there are people in our genre that would say, well, see, that proves it's extraterrestrial. I'm not saying that. I'll tell you what it does prove. It does prove that somebody with a high level of information and skill was there. Somebody. And, you know, it's possible that entire civilization had a high level of information and skill. When the European explorers first made contact with the cities in Mexico and South America, they were stunned. They were looking at cities bigger than any in Europe. Every bit as modern, and some cases more so. So the point is that these ancients were not as primitive as establishment history would like for us to think they were. And, you know, I've talked about this. Graham Hancock talks about this, but I've talked about this a lot. Klaus Donner has talked about it here on the show. That there are indications all over this planet that there was a civil, at least a civilization, maybe several, in epochs past, civilizations about which we know nothing, and yet the evidence they've left behind tells us they were high tech. They had a very high level of technology and knowledge. Now, we don't know what these little yellow spheres are for. We don't know. We don't know why it was important to them to make them, why it was important for them to coat them on the outside and close them in fool's gold. We don't know. Nobody knows. Furthermore, we don't know how they did it. As I said, there are scientists who might say, well, sure, you just do this. You know how to do it. We don't know how they knew how. But they knew how, because there they are. So this is a huge, huge mystery, and the way it fits into the world of the strange and unexplained is pretty easy to see. It's strange and it's unexplained. But beyond that, I think it's evidence of a civilization here in the Americas that was very advanced, possibly as advanced as the civilization that built the pyramids, which is not the civilization that your standard establishment Egyptologist tells you about. Long before the pharaohs, long before that, those pyramids and the Sphinx were there. And you ought to go over at YouTube and see some of the videos with Chris Dunn and Dr. Robert Schock, both of whom have been on this show a number of times, where they talk about and show you huge stones, not just blocks of stone, but stones that have been mill-worked and could not be done with hand tools. We'll be back right after this.
but what would you say if I told you when we're alone? It feels like I'm on a haze. On my coast to you.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. All right, just a couple of more thoughts on this big mystery down in Mexico. It's new. It's a brand new mystery. Well, you know, the stuff's not new. It's been there for at least 2,000 years. But we have newly discovered it, we humans. And it's a huge new mystery for us. And you know, lots of mysteries about this. First of all, nobody knows who built this Teotihuacan. And the native people who were there when the explorers came, they were living there and had a society there. And the explorers asked them, did you build all of this? And they said, oh, no, not us. And, well, who built it? Well, you know, the gods. And we just found it and moved in. So it's a big mystery who did it. That's a mystery. Then this tunnel, newly discovered tunnel, fairly new, has yielded more mystery as the little robot discovered, you know, hundreds of these little orbs, little spheres that had been coated. They can tell chemically. They not coated, but covered, encased. Encased is the word. In fool's gold. And so the mystery of why would you do that? Why would you build hundreds of these little spheres and encase them in fool's gold? And then another mystery. How? How did they know how to do this? Do we know how to do it? Maybe we do. But if we know how to do it, their knowledge equaled ours at that point. And that's a mystery. There have been ancient civilizations on this planet long, long ago wiped out by means unknown, and we know nothing about them except the high-tech evidence they left behind. We're the new kids on the block here. Think about that. We're the new kids on the block. We've been here that long. And there are people who have gone before us as advanced as us. All right, I'm going to open up the telephone lines. We can talk about this, or we can talk about something else. Whatever you wish to talk about. It is BYOT, that means bring your own topic, and as long as it's about the world of the strange and the unexplained, no matter what it is. I mean, it can be Bigfoot, it can be ghosts, it can be demon possession, it can be Sasquatch, it can be UFOs, it can be something that's been found on some of the planet, some of the other planets. Doesn't matter. It's BYOT night. And we haven't had one in a while, so this is a great night for anybody and everybody to call in. It's a great night to do that because there's a great deal more telephone time available. Why? Well, because I've opened the phone lines earlier. All right. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. If you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, we have an additional option available to you. You can call us, and we'd love to talk to you, but it can be a little expensive to make those international calls. We know that. And so for you, we have an additional option. That option is called the Flash Message. And you just go over to the website, scroll down. You'll see the picture about tonight's show. And right above that picture is a link that says Flash Message. All right? All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Captain Ortho Plants Begone, here to rid the world of houseplants.
Okay.
This is Brent from Wyoming.
I could tell.
I know. I just wanted to congratulate you on 13 years.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Brent.
But at least they really... I remember when you first broadcast about this thing about, I don't know, a year ago or 2 years ago, you were wondering if they were going to release what they found in that chamber. Apparently they did.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, as far as I know, they're not holding anything back on this. And, up until now, they had not found anything spectacular. I watched a video where it's a video taken by that little robot rover that went up in there. So it's the cameras on that rover. And you see some, pottery in there and stuff like that. It may be immensely interesting to the archaeologist, but it doesn't seem spectacular. But then when it found, these hundreds of little spheres in a chamber not previously known to exist, that's another thing. And then the weird thing about this, I mean, all of that's mysterious anyway. I mean, what are they for? But then the weird thing about it is that they had been encased at one point in fool's gold, iron pyrite. Now, here's another mystery.
Why did they backfill the tunnels?
Yeah, why did they backfill the tunnels? But here's another thing. How'd the iron pyrite dissolve off of it? It doesn't do that.
I don't know.
I mean, the whole thing is just weird.
Yeah. Here's a possible solution to find out why, how, and why. I wanted to do this since I was in college. I never had the chance for various reasons. Put somebody under hypnosis, have them enter the astral, and then go back and view it, see what it was like back then when that city was brand new.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you know, I'm pretty skeptical of that sort of thing.
I know, so am I. That's why I haven't done it, really.
Well, but here's the deal. There's not another method I know of that you could get the information. And yeah. So no matter how skeptical, it's kind of like a doctor that says, well, this is an untested drug, but there's nothing else, and you're going to die. So you got nothing to lose. Let's use it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like that. The situation being, there's not another method I know of. So why not? You know? How would you, what would you, okay, describe how you would instruct them. What would you have them look for?
The first thing I would have to do is I would introduce them to the world of psychic energies. Very slowly, very gradually, because the guy I may be working with, is my goal is to help him heal himself from a disease he's had for almost 15 years. But as a part of that, I would take him through space and time, just have him look at different places. Then look what they look like now, and then go back and look what they looked like when they were brand new, 2,000 years ago or better.
And so would you have him go into the tunnel and just see what's going on in there? But how would he know what the purpose of these spheres would be?
I would just say, what do you see, and what are they used for? What's their purpose? I would not lead. You cannot lead if you want accurate results.
Okay. Well, maybe you wouldn't even tell him to go look in the and find the spheres. Just go see what's going on in the tunnel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And say, what is the culture like? What is happening? What are they doing? Why are they doing it?
Yeah.
Heck with modern archaeology. Most of that's garbage anyway. I just say, what do you see? What is going on? Why are they doing it? And why are they doing it?
Well, you know, the questions that I have asked about these spheres have to have occurred to these archaeologists.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not as hard on archaeologists as I am on other types of science. And the reason is, you know, the archaeologists generally go ahead and show you the pictures, but they just won't get into the questions. But they generally go ahead and show you the pictures of what they found.
Could be that they're afraid.
Oh, they're afraid for their careers. Yeah, hang on while we take a break. We'll be back right after this, folks.
You're play some cards. You lost my money, you lost my car. Had to foot your way back to LA. You only made it halfway. I ship you sorry, but I really don't. You think I'll come get you, but this time I won't.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome. We're glad you're here. And my sympathies to you for whatever it is that kept you away from that first hour. We've been talking about this new mystery down in Mexico at Teotihuacan. Teotihuacan. And this is BYOT night, so I've opened up the phones, and that means we can talk about that, or we'll talk about anything else that's on your mind within the world of the strange and unexplained. On the telephone with me is Brent from Wyoming. Brent, one more question that I have of you. Okay, you send this person back in time. Of course, we're talking about you hypnotize them.
Astral projection.
And they go back and they see it as it existed 2,000 years ago, and they look around and they come back and they report to you what they saw going on. What is it that you would hope to get out of that? I mean, what information would you be looking for?
Personally, you and I both know that modern archaeology is pretty much dependent upon grant money.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's people like Zawi Hawass. They want power. But the honest archaeologist may have to skew their answers to keep their grant money coming in so they can keep working. I would want an unbiased opinion, observation, based on observations of what the culture was really like.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah. You know, I would like to know why they backfilled it. I would like to know, how does iron pyrite just disintegrate, dissolve, and disappear? I'd like to know, how did they encase the clay spheres?
Yeah.
How did they encase them in iron pyrite? And I would like to know why. What was up? What was that all about? And they're in varying sizes. I'd like to know. There's two main sizes, 1.5 inches around and 5 inches around. And so I'd like to know why. What's the significance of these sizes?
Yeah. That will be for further investigation once you get the person used to looking at the area. Mm. To say, all right, here are some things we found today. Can you go back and tell us what they were used for, how they did it, why they did it, and all that stuff?
Yeah, and I wonder, can remote viewing, Can people that do remote viewing do this sort of thing, going back into the past that way?
So far as I know, there are no limits on space or time.
Okay, cool. Well, Brent, thank you, and thank you for your well wishes as well.
All right, you have a good night.
All right, thanks. 623-444-5889. It is BYOT night. Bring your own topic. Big, big mystery going on, and we're talking about it, so we can talk about that. But if you have something else you wish to talk about tonight, we can talk about that as well. All you have to do is pick up your telephone, give me a call, and say, Kevin, I want to change the subject. I want to talk about this. And it's on, okay? You get to select. BYOT, bring your own topic. We have a flash message from Hank in the UK, and he said, didn't you do a show concerning spheres found somewhere in Africa? Yes, Hank, I did. As a matter of fact, I've mentioned those a couple of times, more than a couple of times, on the air. They were actually discovered in South Africa at a mining operation in a strata said to be, I believe, I could be wrong about this, but I think it's 1.8 billion years old. Nope, that's right, 1.8 billion. They were found in the strata that geologists tell us is from 1.8 billion with a B, billion years ago. And there were spheres. Okay, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is John from the old stopping grounds in Mesa, Arizona.
Hello, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
Outstanding. Thanks.
Congratulations on your anniversary.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I had a couple of thoughts on your pyramid and the lack of paperwork down there. I'll throw out and see what you think.
All right.
There's any number of reasons why a civilization may pick up and move. Mm-hmm. You know, drought, war, famine back then.
Yeah.
And then if you were going to restart a civilization somewhere else, what would you take with you? All of the printed knowledge that had been acquired in your libraries so that you wouldn't have to relearn old stuff.
Except their stuff would have been on stone. That's kind of hard to carry with you.
Well, you assume that they didn't have papyrus or anything like that. But
well, you're right.
Could have had.
You're right.
You know, there was the Library of Alexandria about the same time, which had all the known knowledge as far as we know. They must have got it from somewhere. And if they were able to acquire it, certainly others would have been able to as well.
Well, you know, you make a valid point, several valid points. We assume that it was all stone because that's what we find. But if they took it with them and went somewhere else, you know, and they if it was papyrus, or well, it wouldn't be papyrus, but it could have been some sort of flexible writing material. And
yeah, sheep skin, you know, animal skins.
Yeah, they could have.
And then the up and coming civilization who may have come in and occupied the ruins later on may have found these things and burned them. It wouldn't be the first society that destroyed prior knowledge.
Yeah, I doubt they did that. The native peoples are even today are not really given to doing that. But I'll tell you who did burn a whole bunch of Mayan stuff, and that's the Spanish.
Well, and then Hitler burned a lot of stuff during World War II, too.
Yeah, but I'm talking about down there.
Oh, okay.
When the Spanish came in, the conquistadores, and they brought their missionaries with them, the missionaries, if they couldn't read it, they determined it was from the devil. And so
exactly.
They burned it. They burned it.
And the only reason we have any of it is because they saved two or three writings and...
Yeah.
And they sent them off to Europe to be examined, I think.
Yeah. And, you kind of wonder about that. You know, I mean, why wouldn't they consider that the ignorance was from the devil and just burn themselves?
Yeah, there's no, you know, just because it's printed on an old piece of paper doesn't make it factual any more than
that's right.
A fantasy writer writing today would make something factual because somebody read it 2,000 years from now.
That's true.
Yeah, so there's nothing, you know, you and I and most of this civilization have little fear of printed words, but you don't know about superstition back then when you couldn't read. There's a great mystique about what is printed in these books that you have no knowledge of.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, you know, when I was growing up, college graduates, boy, they were smart people. They knew everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as I grew up and became acquainted with college professors through my church, and the college professors would have me, a junior or senior in high school, come and help them because they had clue one about how their car worked, I realized that they were very intelligent within a narrow field of study.
Yeah. All right, so let me ask you, do you think that this ancient civilization that built this, and we don't know who did it, but do you think, really, that they had writing on flexible materials?
I do, yeah. I don't think that it's possible to be a civilization without, one, the acquisition of knowledge and the preservation of knowledge and a process of teaching it to a new generation, because there's only a certain amount that can happen with one generation in the acquisition of knowledge, even if it's given to you by another civilization. It takes a while to acquire the talent to create enough hands of knowledgeable people to build whatever you're building.
You are making some excellent points here. As a matter of fact, you're sort of hitting this out of the ballpark. Those are excellent points. Great.
Well, thank you. I ponder things like this late at night when I can't sleep.
Does it hurt when you ponder?
Well, you know, late at night I take a pain pill, you know, and then I don't notice the pain so much.
Yeah. Yeah, well, those are excellent points. You know, there's only so many events that can happen in one person's lifetime, and there's only so many of those events they can be aware of. And then there's only so much of that they can mentally grasp. I mean, it keeps reducing down, so it takes several generations of passing knowledge forward to build
Correct.
Up a civilization, yeah.
And then even after you acquire the knowledge, you can specialize within that knowledge. For instance, let's take airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we went right from the Wright brothers to motorized airplanes and to the bigger, heavier than flight, and we totally missed that whole generation of ultralight.
Yeah.
You know, and that was another field that came much later,
mm-hmm.
because somebody else said, well, what if?
Mm-hmm. Well, excellent,
and so, you know, you have all
points.
These sidelines that can show up within a field of knowledge that may not have occurred to the first people who came up across with it, but somebody else who was studying the old ways and then said, well, what if I do this?
Yeah.
So what if I do that?
Yeah. And they take a little side trip, and it turns out technologically to be better, and that becomes the main trip then.
Yeah, and it wasn't all that many years ago that our aeroscience couldn't tell you how bumblebees flew.
Uh-huh.
You know, there was no way that a bumblebee could fly as far as we knew back when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And we've since explained it, but it's a great example of knowledge. All the knowledge we know may not be all the knowledge. I mean, you're famous for saying that, we know what we know,
mm-hmm.
but what don't we know?
Yeah, and we hit that fence around our knowledge real fast. You know, if you pile up all the knowledge on this planet, we think that would be a lot, right?
Right.
But if you compare that to what there is yet to know, we have hit the fence really quick at that point. And, all the knowledge that we've got now, all of it, would be a pinhead compared to what there is yet to know.
when we were kids, you and I, and I say that because I am a few years older than you, but when we were kids, you know, our galaxy was pretty much it. And what we thought were, and what turned out to be other galaxies, we called fuzzy stars back then.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, we have surpassed that knowledge, and there are, I get the feeling from a lot of scientists and astronomers that, you know, we know it all now, and I'm going, I don't think so.
Yeah, well, you know, it wasn't all that long ago that, and this is hard for people now to realize this, it was not all that long ago that science did not know there was a universe.
Exactly.
Truly, our galaxy was it.
Yep.
They didn't realize that there is a universe full of these galaxies. And it was not that, really, it was not that long ago. I was reading, I think it was, what, in the early 1900s when they discovered that.
Yeah, it's, you know, maybe a little over 100 years, but not a whole lot over 100 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, that's just a drop in the bucket of the recorded time that we know of.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, man, I appreciate the call.
Okay.
All right. Have a good one.
Talk to you later.
623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. Is the number to call. It's BYOT night, and I'm talking about this new mystery down in Mexico. It's absolutely, in my opinion, fascinating, stunning. It says volumes, it screams volumes about past civilizations that we know nothing about, and or very, very little about them. It says things that I think are probably disturbing for a lot of establishment scientists, not all of them. You know, not all establishment scientists are mental sticks in the mud. Really, I mean, a lot of establishment scientists are establishment, but keep an open mind. And are willing to explore other possibilities. And that's a good thing. But I think for a lot of establishment scientists, what I'm suggesting here tonight is it has to be very, very disturbing. Because it means that our grasp of how we got here is wrong. That doesn't imply that this was extraterrestrials. It could be. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't imply that. But let's say you have a civilization there that is as advanced, or nearly so, as we are technologically. Maybe different technologies, but with those technologies, able to do things that we don't know how to do now. That happens. Okay, I mean, there's more documentation of that over in Egypt and in Syria. But they were able to do things that you could not possibly do with copper tools. It just couldn't, it cannot be done today with copper tools. You think copper was different then? And so, the only way it could be done, and with the precision that it was done, was with highly precise, high technology tools. And yet these are thousands of years old. Now that's the stuff over in Egypt. Again, I recommend that you go over to YouTube and search out the videos by Christopher Dunn, or that have Christopher Dunn in them. And you'll see that both in Egypt, and you'll see it in South America and Mexico. So, you know, we don't know where the tools are. We didn't find the tools. Not yet. We may never. we haven't found the tools. But if you have a sculpture, and let's say, take anyone, Michelangelo's sculptures, any one of them, just pick one. You might not know Michelangelo, but you look at those sculptures and you can tell there was a sculptor. You can see it. And you can actually even see some of the tool marks. Now, when you look at these huge structures and you see tool marks, and you have an engineer like Christopher Dunn, who measures very precisely and shows that these things were built with extreme precision, that these were cut with extreme precision, that they were milled with extreme precision. And he tells you the only way this can be done is if you use this kind of a tool or that kind of a tool, which we have today. Other than that, I don't know of any way it can be done. You have to have very, very precise machinery to do this. Well, there it is. It's sitting there. There it is. You may not have found the tools, but you know they were there. Just like with that sculpture, you may not know the sculptor, but you know the sculptor was there. You know there had to be one. Somebody built it. And that's the way this stuff is. Whenever you come across this kind of archaeological magnificent mystery, you might not know what was it for. You might not know exactly how did they do it, but they did it. And so if you think about, well, how would we do that? Okay, go ahead and list it. How would we do it? Well, they had to do something very, very similar to get that same result. And what's disturbing to a lot of the establishment is that means we're not the first bright, smart people on this planet. We're not the first advanced civilization here. There have been others. And see, this gets into that whole thing about the forbidden zone. You've heard me talk about how Earth today is pretty much like the planet of the apes, right? Earth today is, if you remember the Planet of the Apes movies, there was a forbidden zone, and the great apes, you know, the ruler, the general, the high priest, you know, these great apes that were the leaders and pillars of their society. You know, they had built all of their power based on, you know, number one, they came from the great ape in the sky. Number two, he had endowed them with mental capabilities well beyond any other creatures on the planet. Number three, you know, they believe in order and respect for each other and all of this. Sounds very noble, right? Sounds familiar too, doesn't it? But there was a forbidden zone that those great apes forbade the other apes from going in there. Now, the reason for that was because in that forbidden zone lay the absolute proof that the humans were here and intelligent before the apes. And that would crumble their society. That would crumble apedom. And so the great apes had this forbidden zone. And they told people, you know, you'll die and go to hell and all kinds of, I'm making that up, but I mean, you know, all kinds of bad stuff would happen to them if they went into the forbidden zone. And they enforced that with their military, their ape military. So when we start talking about evidence that there were civilizations here as advanced as us, we start talking about that and showing the evidence for that, we have entered the forbidden zone that the great apes of science, technology, and religion don't want us to enter. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back. Find your phone.
Thank you.
welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And we are BYOT for the next few minutes. If we don't get any calls, we'll turn the phones off and move ahead. 623-444-5889, the last broadcast of our 13th year of broadcasting. Right here, right now, live on the air. I was talking about this Forbidden Zone, and sometimes people have a difficult time grasping the concept because they've not run up against it. They've not run up against the forbidders. Well, I have, but certainly archaeologists who have tried to say what they have found, they've run up against these forbidders as well. It's there. The Forbidden Zone is there. And you don't cross the line and tell people, well, this is from 20 million years ago or something like that, because that doesn't fit with the established story. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. Okay, caller, we're not hearing you, so I'll hang up and you can give us a call back, okay? 623-444-5889. We do have a flash message from Carl in Australia. Carl says, "G'day, Kevin. Congratulations for 13 years of spot-on broadcasting. Good on you, mate." Thanks, Carl. And hopefully we'll get another 13 in before it's all over and before it's all said and done. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is John from Arizona again. I have a point real quick, if you don't mind me calling a second time.
May as well. Everybody else is asleep, John.
Okay. Back to the copper tools.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like anything else. You work with what you've got.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen some studies and read some things on the hardening of those copper tools. I think you may have touched on it earlier, but, you know, they put alloys and other minerals in to make those tools much harder than we now assume that they were made from copper. And some of the later ones may not have actually had those alloys in, and they may have tried to copy ancient technology without the alloys and made softer tools.
These are machine cuts, and you can see the tool cuts. You can see the saw blade cuts. These are holes that are drilled deep into the granite stone, and you can see the drill bit markings. These are definitely not hand tools. These are definitely power tools, and they're definitely another thing. With the hand tools, I don't care how good you are, you cannot do the precision that those machines can. And they've been measured to the tolerances and preciseness that you would have to have our computer-guided machinery to do it.
Well, that's how we would do it. And like
no, you can't. There's no way to do it with hand tools, period. No hands
well,
ever could do
it. Well, it may have been not computer-guided, but it may have taken longer and, you know, to do some pretty intricate hand stuff is possible. It just takes a lot longer.
Cannot be done by hand. Cannot be done by hand. If it
well,
could,
when I say by hand, I mean, you know, with levers and...
Oh, it may be more manual and less automatic, yeah, but it's precision, precision high-tech tools.
Yeah, okay, well, I see what you're saying. You know, it could be operated by hand, but not necessarily. You know, for instance, some of the winches that they would build out of wood in England, where they would have basically a mouse cage where people would walk inside of it and hoist up heavy stones to build their castles with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a technology. It's pretty basic, but it's still better than trying to lift it by yourself.
Yeah. However, when we start talking about the stones in Egypt and in Syria, we do not have cranes that can lift those stones.
Pretty big ones.
You take the that big granddaddy stone at Baalbek. If you take
the one that still hasn't been taken out of the ground.
Yeah. You have room. Yeah. You have room around that stone to put, I think it's 6, it may be 10, of our biggest, heaviest lift cranes, and all of them together cannot pick that stone up.
Pretty amazing stuff, especially when you see things like some of the hoists that they have in the ocean, picking up entire ships and that kind of thing. But
yeah, but they're nowhere near the weight of that stone.
That stone's stone gathers up pounds real quick.
Yeah, it does. But the go look at the stuff on YouTube with Christopher Dunn, and particularly Christopher Dunn and Dr. Robert Schock, who's a geologist. And you'll see him as he, you'll see Dunn. As,
well, Robert Schock, if I'm not mistaken, is the one that talks about the water erosion down in the pit around the Sphinx.
Yeah, on the side of the Sphinx.
Exactly, and that it must have predated the Egypt we know, because the Egypt we know was Arab like it is now.
Yeah.
And there, there are some writings I've seen that say that the Nile used to empty into the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah.
So,
so a lot of things have changed, but here's the deal. You watch those with Christopher Dunn, who is an engineer and a lifelong machinist engineer, and watch him measure and describe for you what he's doing, and he describes for you what kind of machinery would have to be used and what kind we would use today to do this. And he'll come up on some stuff where he says, I don't know how you really could do this. And this guy, his credentials would fill a supermarket.
Okay. Right, I have seen him before, and he is quite the expert in the field, and I you know, agree with him. You know, with what he knows about modern day engineering,
yeah,
he cannot see how they would be done, but somebody did it.
Well, that's my point exactly, and what that screams is they had the technology and the knowledge at our level.
Something, yeah, something similar to or equivalent to
or beyond.
Or beyond, yeah.
Yeah. And see that right there, John, that is the forbidden zone. That's it. The forbidden zone is to even think that there was ever anybody here as smart or smarter than us and as developed or more so than us.
Well, I gave up thinking that there was never a civilization as smart as this a long time ago when we started digging stuff up and looking at civilizations that did brain surgery and created vast armadas and all kinds of things.
You know something? My dad was a very, very religious man. And he used to quote, when anything like this would come up, he would quote something out of Ecclesiastes in the Bible. And he would say, there is nothing new under the sun. And in Ecclesiastes, it says that. What was is what shall be. What is will pass away. But what was is what shall be. And there is nothing new under the sun. And, you know, he used to say, he said, you know, I believe that's literally true.
I do too. There's ancient writings that talk about airplanes and wars in the skies, and it makes you wonder, you know, what were they watching, or were they making it up?
From South America, there are models of airplanes.
Yep.
And they, what they did is they scaled those up, put a little motor on them, and see, are they aerodynamically correct? They just built it, scaled up.
I watch these kind of things, too.
And, yeah, and they fly, you know.
Well, and it's fascinating, because modern-day scientists have written off prior generations so readily that it just tickles me to see, hey,
yeah,
we've dug another hole and we're examining another 2 square inches of this elephant that, gee, somebody else hasn't seen yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we talk about UFOs and we talk about disclosure of UFOs and extraterrestrials. But you know something? The disclosure of this kind of information, of our past, the disclosure of where our species has been.
Well,
that's as big. That is
as much
big.
As they find or as much as they tell us.
Yeah. The disclosure of all of that is as big a deal as disclosure of UFOs and extraterrestrials.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, I think UFOs are historical. They're future. They're now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they, it's just part of the history that has been buried that the great apes have decided that we don't need to know about because it interferes with whatever their grand plan is.
That's true, but you see, the disclosure of this information about our own people, our own civilizations that preceded us,
mm-hmm.
disclosure about, you know, their high level of technology is as big a deal as the UFO thing. Maybe bigger because, I mean, you know, let me tell you, I just found out this morning something I never knew about my family. One of my uncles just had his 97th birthday, and somebody in the family had done an extensive genealogical search back through just that side of the family.
Mm-hmm.
This would be my grandfather's side of the family, and discovered that we go all the way back to Hertfordshire, England, and
mm-hmm.
I don't know where in Hertfordshire. Hertfordshire is like a county. So Hertford is a town in that county. It's the, we would say the county seat.
Right.
But we arrived here, that side of the family arrived here just a few years after Jamestown was founded. Jamestown was founded in 1607. And our people arrived here in like 1618, I think it was, something like that. And so my family's been here since before the United States was here. I didn't know that. Okay.
It's always fun to find those kind of things out. You know,
but here's the deal. Here's the deal. That was a fact before I knew it. And
that's true. That's true.
And that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. We need this whole deal about high-tech civilizations and who was here and who they were and what they built and what they knew. We need all of that disclosed because it's kind of like your genealogy. And the reason they don't want to do it is because then you have to address the question, what happened to them?
Exactly.
And when you when you address that question, when you address the question of the catastrophes and the disasters, you're addressing our near future, and they're not going to
do it. Well, if we know why an ancient civilization died off, if we studied it, we would be able to avoid at least the same mistakes they made.
Maybe.
Well, hopefully, yeah.
You know, we hear the stories about Atlantis,
mm-hmm.
and we know exactly, I mean, people say, well, that's just mythology. Okay, mythology or real, doesn't matter. We know why they died, and we're doing mm-hmm. the same doggone stuff. Hey, I got to run.
Okay.
Thanks. All right, folks, we'll be back after this break. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on Final Approach. Only a few minutes left in tonight's show. 623-444-5889 is the telephone number. This is the final show of 13 years of broadcasting. And if you have tuned in late and you don't know that story, well, then you need to catch it in the latest show, when we upload the latest show here later tonight. The Forbidden Zone contains information they don't want us to have. You know, I was very, very confused about, well, why don't they want us to know about previous civilizations? Why don't they want us to know about that? I'm talking about high-tech civilizations that lived on this planet. Yes, prehistory. Prehistory. History begins when man began writing or drawing pictures. But before that, do you realize that the cavemen who drew pictures had ancestors? And it's not the Darwinian picture. Come on, folks. We know that people with machine tools were on this planet 1.8 billion years ago. How do we know that? Because we found what they made in strata from 1.8 billion years ago. There they are. There's not clay pottery. It's these spheres, and they have very precise grooves around them. Whole bunch of them. Nobody knows what they're for. Inside of them, some of them are solid, some of them are hollow. And the ones that are hollow inside have a spongy material that disintegrates pretty rapidly once you break it open and expose it to the air. Nobody has said, what is that? I have addressed that on this show. And I've said, why hasn't some scientist taken those into a laboratory, broken one open, in laboratory conditions, in a vacuum so it's not exposed to air, and test it and find out what is that? But somebody made them 1.8 billion years ago, right here on this planet. So why don't they want you to know about that? Well, because then you want to know, who were they? They don't have that answer. Okay, we can live with that. What happened to them? And there are successive civilizations that have been wiped out. Near extinction events on this planet. They don't want you to know that. And the reason they don't is because they don't want you to think it could happen to us. It can, and sooner or later it will. I don't think it's next week. I don't think it will be for a very, very, very long time, and there are evidentiary reasons why I say that. But they don't want you to know. They don't want you to think about the fact that something is coming down the road over which they have no control. And so it's, I mean, that's my opinion. I think that's the answer, though. I think they don't want to have to answer questions about the catastrophes and disasters that have befallen our race down through history and taken us to near extinction. And, you know, in one generation after a near extinction event, in one generation, you're back in the Stone Age. You may be back in it in that generation when it happens. If all the power on the earth went out, almost everybody on the earth died, if that happened, the survivors would be in the Stone Age. Very, very quickly. Even if they had a fancy bunker underground. That can only last under there for so long. And then you got to come up. When you come up, you're in the Stone Age. And I think that's the deal. I think they don't want to talk about that. They don't want you to think about that. They want you to think only about going to work, earning money, consuming goods, borrowing money, going home, too tired to have any entertainment that would be entertainment, get you a little rest, get up and do it again tomorrow. That's what they want. That's what they're getting. That's how most of you spend your days, right? They're getting what they want. So they don't want that upset. Well, this thing down in Mexico brings it all back up again. And I'm glad it does. I'm absolutely delighted that it brings it all back to the news again. Because you see, by reporting what they found in that tunnel, it cracks open the mysteries. It doesn't explain the mysteries, but it cracks open the shell around it, and everybody has to say, now that's mysterious. How did they do this? Why did they do this? Who were they? Where did they go? How did this happen? And what it says is that those people had to have a very high level of knowledge and a very high level of skill. And we're not talking about Stone Age stuff. We're talking about advanced stuff. They had to have a very high knowledge and very high skill to have done what they did. Where'd they go? Who were they? The natives that were living there when the conquistadores arrived were not the people who built Teotihuacan. They said so. They said no. These were built by the gods. Who are they? Where did they go? Are they coming back? The part about it being built by the gods, that may be mythology. We don't know. That's what the natives told the conquistadors. So we don't know. It might be mythology. But it was certainly built by somebody with a lot of knowledge and a lot of skill. A very, very advanced level of knowledge and skill. All right, that's going to do it for this evening, ladies and gentlemen. And I want to thank those who did call in. I want to thank those who sent flash messages. You helped make it happen. Those who were asleep, sleep on. This is the final show of 13 years. If you haven't subscribed to the K-Files, you need to subscribe. And the way you do that is get over to the website. And on the website, kevinsmithshow.com, click where it says K-Files. And, by the way, subscribe. We publish that every 2 weeks. It'll be coming out next week. You have time to get on that mailing list, and you should do it. So you just subscribe, and you'll automatically then get an email, and it has a link in it. And that link, you have to click it to activate your subscription. If you don't click it, you're not subscribed, so be sure you do that, all right? And then you'll get next week's edition. It's been my privilege, it's been my pleasure to be your host for the past 13 years. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.